The teen is wavering between responsibility and irresponsibility. They are confused as to which path to pursue. They need a strong excuse to do the right thing, and they need the parent to give them that motivation. Every parent needs to establish some biblical convictions. We have been discussing several of these convictions, and today I want to share another one with you. And that is this: we will see the wrong crowd as family enemy number one. Every teenager who gets into trouble is, almost without exception, with the wrong crowd. One of the themes of the Old Testament is God trying to keep His people away from the wrong crowd. It all began with Adam and Eve, who got into trouble when they associated with the wrong crowd. The wrong crowd includes anyone who influences your teen to do wrong or who does wrong with your teen. There are two identifying characteristics of wrong crowd type of kids. Number one, they are sneaky and phony. And number two, they are proud of what they should be ashamed of. You can detect your teen's involvement with the wrong crowd. The presence of a few of the symptoms I'm about to list may not indicate that your teen is in the wrong crowd, but if several are present, and if these symptoms are radical changes from how your teen has behaved in the past, then they are involved in the wrong crowd. Let me list for you several symptoms of being involved in the wrong crowd. Emotionally pulling away from the family. Resisting family rules and values. Becoming friends with kids you've never heard of. Becoming defensive about their friends. Always taking phone calls in private. Hiding letters and other belongings. Being evasive about where he or she goes and about what he or she does. Going straight to the rooms and holding up there after being out with friends. Changing appearance to identify with kids who do the wrong things. Beginning to exhibit a negative personality change. Receiving grades that are much lower than usual. Balking about going to church. How can you know if new friends are from the right crowd or the wrong crowd, you may ask? First of all, listen in on one-sided phone conversations. You can often read the whole conversation by hearing only half of it. For example, if your teenager replies with a lot of one-word answers like yes, no, and says, I can't talk right now, while the body language speaks of uneasiness, it's time to be concerned. When someone calls one of my teens, they are coming into my house. I want to know who's coming into my house. After all, it is my house. A second way we can know if new friends are from the right or wrong crowd is to check with other parents and adult youth leaders. Call parents you are close to and ask if they know anything about the names that you're beginning to hear. Sunday school teachers, youth ministers, school teachers, coaches, they may also be able to give you a clue. Thirdly, room searches are also in order when you're struggling to preserve the lives of your teens. You see, privacy is an earned privilege for teenagers. It is not an inalienable right. You may need to say something like this to your teen. Privacy is a family privilege that comes with teaching us to trust you and maturing toward adulthood. Small children have no privacy at all. As you know, in our home, if you abuse it, you lose it. If you abuse privacy, you lose privacy. Now, here's what to do if and when your teen is already involved with the wrong crowd. First of all, establish the following understanding with your teenager. If you are involved with a friend, our whole family is involved with that friend. We have a family-style family. Therefore, we can have something to say about who your friends are. Secondly, require a complete and clean break with the wrong crowd. Adopt this slogan. If you make bad music with someone, you don't get to band with him or her anymore. I basically believe in the cold turkey approach, the complete removal of contact with the wrong crowd. Breaking friendships is like open heart surgery. It's difficult to perform, and healing does take time. But two elements must change, dear friend, before a teen will begin to improve. First, the rebellious attitude, and secondly, the crowd that feeds it. A great place to start is to cut off the support group feeding the rebellious attitude of your teen. The kids in the wrong crowd always have to be worth what your teenager is giving up to get to be with them. Your teen, whether they realize it or not, is giving up a right relationship with God, a peaceful conscience, a right relationship with parents, maybe a high school or college education, and perhaps a good reputation with their peers. The wrong crowd has to be worth what your teenager is enduring for it. He or she is enduring awkward feelings of guilt, discomfort in the presence of good people, a gnawing feeling of wasting his or her life, a fear of death, and an insecurity about eternity. Parent, don't surrender to the intimidation that will come. If we tell him he can't run around with so-and-so, then he'll rebel and do it for sure. If we don't say anything, maybe he'll quit on his own. Parents, we must do what is right and not compromise with what is wrong. Remember, those of us in counseling teens have never seen anyone change who has kept his or her active contacts with the wrong crowd. Do you want to take your stand and have a crisis at this point? Or do you want to wait until the entanglements become more entrenched? And parent, you also have to be absolutely true to your own principles. Your kids desperately need you to stay true to your moral principles. Compromising confuses your kids. If you go soft on the principles you've held all these years, they'll think that nothing is sacred anymore. They'll think, well, Mom and Dad really didn't believe what they taught me all of those years. Teens challenge parents to see how tough they are. The answer comes back, I am made of jello. Not only does the teen begin to feel a lack of respect for the parent, but they also sense a lack of love in the relationship also. Genuine love demands toughness in moments of crisis. Once the teen becomes addicted to the thrills of a sinful lifestyle, they become intoxicated with a lust for pleasure. You must confront the undesirable behavior immediately. Make it clear there are limits to what you will tolerate. When you do this, you're showing self-respect and confidence. The parent must give the teen a reason to return. The teen is unlikely to invest energy and time and self-control to accomplish the task unless they absolutely must. It is only when they become miserable will they accept the responsibility for change. It is only when they see everything of value slipping away that the choices will become clear. It is only when the well runs dry that they begin to miss the water. The teen is wavering between responsibility and irresponsibility. They are confused as to which path to pursue. They need a strong excuse to do the right thing, and they need the parent to give them that motivation. As long as they are allowed to be torn between two lifestyles, they can postpone a commitment. Parent, please maintain a happy and positive family atmosphere as much as possible, providing a lot of fun opportunities so that giving up the wrong crowd is not surrendering to loneliness and boredom. Teens cannot live in a vacuum that's void of friendships. They're not going to give up the wrong crowd and stay free of it very long unless they are able to fill the vacuum with the right crowd. Pray that God will put the right individual in a young person's pathway. That individual can do more for a kid than counseling and can do it more rapidly. When a teen brings a friend home, parents often ask the question, why him? Why her? And the teen often replies, yeah, but my folks don't even know what my friends are really like. If they knew them, they'd like them. They write them off on the basis of their dress, the way they talk, or the homes they come from. They don't bother to get to know them. They just tell me they don't want me to run around with that kid because they've heard something about him, or because they don't like the car he drives or the way he looks. If they only knew some of those kids at church, they wouldn't be so all fired happy to have me run around with them either. There are some really great con artists among those church kids. At least my friends are honest. Parents, we must understand that teenagers face a lot of rejection in high school, and that one person that they are spending time with may simply be someone who is willing to spend some time with your son or daughter. Being friendless means being lonely. You feel as if there must be something wrong with you. We must understand that someone who is spending time with your child may be someone who is willing to listen to your teenager. There's an awesome power in the listening ear. A young person desperately wants to have someone who will listen to their problems, their opinions, their viewpoints, their dreams, their angers, their frustration, their hopes, and their fears. Jay Kessler, when commenting on your teen's friends, said this, I realize that when a bedraggled, uncommunicative kid walks into your house behind your teenager, it's a little hard to say, let's see, what do we have here? We have someone who is willing to be available to my teenager. Someone who's willing to be loyal, willing to listen, willing to be uncritical and accepting, and willing to accept my son or daughter unconditionally. But that just might be what you have. Attitudes toward our teenagers' friends are as important as our actions. Teenagers tend to be intensely loyal. To disparage a friend is to insult your teen. We should think twice before we dispense criticisms of your teen's friends. Even when we have some serious questions about our adolescent's friends, it is best to refrain from criticism. Instead, we can ask our adolescents how they feel about the friend in question. Quite often, you will find your son or daughter has some of the same reservations you do. If we take time to listen and don't jump in too soon, we may find that they are pretty good judges of character themselves. If our teens don't perceive some potential problem that we observe, we can raise our concern in a non-judgmental way. We might say, "What do you think about Tom's drinking?" Or, "I wonder why Tom has trouble getting along with his teachers." These questions or other concerned comments express concern over Tom's well-being. They also encourage discussion that is instantly canceled by accusatory statements like, "I don't want you running around with that alcoholic," or "Your friend has a terrible attitude." Parents, we must see the wrong crowd as family enemy number one.